Funding for Think is made possible by SMU's Master of Liberal Studies.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. What does it take to understand a TV newscast? While the graphics may be slick and easy to read, the language simple to digest, and the video dramatic and compelling, my guest today would argue that viewers need to comprehend what goes on behind the scenes in order to put the information broadcast into the proper context. And even then, he is convinced TV journalism will never be sufficient to keep viewers fully informed about the news and issues that matter most. Steve Powers is a former News Talk anchor from New York who also holds a PhD in media studies. His newly updated book, originally co-written with the late Neil Postman, is called How to Watch TV News. Steve, welcome to Think.
It's a pleasure to be here, Chris.
I want to start with this. You say we need to understand that news is more often made than gathered. What does that mean?
It means that there's somebody producing really a product that's trying to attract you to buy that product by watching it. Basically, the way a newscast works is that producers are putting it together and then teasing you often to watch specific stories so that you will stay with that newscast right through to the commercials. And that is what they are basically interested in, is selling your eyeballs to advertisers so that the advertisers will spend money for the station and thus make a profit for the station.
Yeah, let's talk about those teases, because you talk about this as getting people in under the electronic tent, essentially. This is those segments where they'll say, you need to know why these shoes are dangerous for your kids. Keep watching to find out.
Right. And you're sitting on the couch and saying, well, tell me now. If they're dangerous, I want to take action immediately.
Right.
I don't want to wait 5 or 6 minutes for the information.
What counts as news?
What constitutes news?
Yeah.
Well, it's a very subjective thing, and that's one of the difficulties. The basic idea of news is to present information to the public that's important to them in their everyday lives, how they can use it for their health, their economic well-being. And what's happened is the news is somewhat perverted because of that economic factor that I mentioned before. It's perverted to trying to get you to watch it, so therefore they're throwing more so-called interesting or sensational information at you in order for you to get hooked into watching the newscast. And thus you have so many stories about Paris Hilton or Lindsay Lohan or these kinds of things in order to attract a larger audience and a demographically desirable to the sponsor audience, which is usually younger, so that you'll watch that newscast and stay for the commercials.
Yeah, what is it that advertisers like specifically about news audiences in particular?
Well, it really depends. For example, on the major network news, which usually runs around 6:30 around the country, if you watch those commercials, they are geared toward older people, and the reason is the demographic of that group is 60 years and older. Watching the 6:30 network news, and the longer those newscasts are on the air, the older the audiences get. So therefore, you have commercials that are geared toward older people. You'll have the drug commercials, heart commercials, and so on and so forth. The other thing is on the local newscasts, you will have a higher demographic because the higher age demographic, because kids more often than not are drifting over to other forms of information, such as the internet, the Jon Stewart show. So the television news is losing its cachet somewhat.
You talked about Lindsay Lohan, and you mentioned in the book that when Anna Nicole Smith died, her death received considerably more coverage that day and that week than the Iraq War, which is pretty stunning.
It is stunning, and again, that's a perfect example of how sensationalism changes the news. The whole matter of this business of sensationalism really came about because of the success of news. For a long time, the newscasts on the major networks were what we call like a loss leader. They weren't making any money. They would bring prestige to the network or prestige to the local station. You remember when CBS was called the Tiffany Network. That was because of Walter Cronkite and Edward R. Murrow and people like that. And it was a beautiful crown for the network. Then what happened was success. 60 Minutes started to make money. And station managers, network managers started to see that, and they said, hey, if that can make money, maybe the newscast can make money. And then the producers started to try to attract a bigger audience to the evening news and to local newscasts and a younger audience, and then they started to change the formula of the kind of information they were presenting to the people, more sensationalism, more on a local level, if it bleeds, it leads. That kind of thinking, more trying to hook you right in the beginning of the newscast so that you'll stay through for the commercials. All of these commercial considerations started to come to bear on the newscast, and so we have what we have now, which are newscasts and cable channels just loaded with sensational information. The Anna Nicole Smith is the perfect example. And for the week when she died, it consumed 21% of cable airtime, and that was more than any other story that we're talking about. Iraq, the economy, Afghanistan, you named it. Anna Nicole Smith was the most watched story of that week.
You know, some defenders of TV news will say, look, we would like to be doing more serious things, but this is what the people want. We're giving the viewers what they want. But from your perspective, viewers often need to know things that they may not care to know about.
Yeah, that's right. There are things that we need to know about and that we don't even know that we need to know about, that if someone doesn't present them to us on the news, they would just drift off into space, and we'd never know about it. The idea of a journalist is to present the truth. The ideal would be to present the truth and to give people information that they need to live productive lives, and that goes everything from what their politicians are doing, playing that role as a watchdog, how the property taxes in certain areas of this country are actually wrecking communities because people can't afford to live in their towns and have to move. There's just dozens and dozens of stories. A perfect example is Lara Logan, who was the chief foreign correspondent for CBS News, recently was talking about the coverage of the Iraq War, and she points out that CBS News no longer stations a single full-time correspondent in Iraq. No longer stations a full-time correspondent in Iraq. We have 150,000 men and women in the armed forces over there, and we don't have one full-time correspondent. And they also point out that there's no American television network has a full-time correspondent in Afghanistan, and there are more and more soldiers being killed in Afghanistan even than in Iraq. So there's one example of information we need that we're not getting.
There is the matter, of course, of sort of staying in business, and news directors have this extreme balancing act that they have to perform because they have to have enough stories out there that people sort of come to the program and get the information they might need. Can you talk a little bit about what they have to take into account?
Sure. There's growing pressure on news directors around the country to, again, present this audience. If they can't come up with a lot of people watching their newscast and in the proper demographic, which tends to be older, 18 to 49, then they are often replaced by people who run the station. And more these stations and networks are being run by huge corporations, to the extent where it's believed now that about 5 major corporations run most of the television outlets in this country. That's 5 corporations. Now, while they may not have a specific agenda or pass it on to the news director and say, this is what we want you to do, the news director, one of the pressures the news director is under is he knows or she knows that that corporation is watching what the product is. So they tend not to be critical of that corporation that owns them. At the same time, the corporation wants profits. It's very hard for the news director to go to a corporation and say, hey, we did a wonderful expose on X, Y, and Z, and we brought a lot of information about the schools to our community, and the corporation saying, yeah, but what about the bottom line? So the bottom line becomes really important, and then we get into individual values, if you will. In other words, the question, Chris, is, if you were a news director and the station manager says, hey, you guys have got to pepper up the news. We got to get more sexy news on the air so we can get more people watching and more kids watching so that we can sell more commercials, you will have to make an individual decision as a news director as to whether you're going along with that agenda or whether you're going to say, hey, I have a responsibility as a journalist, as a news director here, to put on a news that's of value and importance to the community. And, you know, occasionally I can throw in a story about Paris Hilton, but the newscast basically has to be one of value to the audience.
Steve,
one last point. That's Associated Press itself sent out a memo to, and it said, hey, from now on, stories that involve Paris Hilton, Lindsay Lohan, celebrities are important, and we want everybody to be cognizant of that fact. So that's the trend in TV news.
So the Associated Press came down with a pronouncement that celebrity news is important.
Yes, yes.
Steve Powers is my guest. He's a journalist and media scholar. His book is called How to Watch TV News. Full disclosure, I started my career in local television news. Every news director I have ever met has an office full of monitors, and they watch everything the competitors run in addition to their own newscasts. Can you talk about how that affects the tide of what gets covered and how newscasts tend to sort of align with each other?
Sure. It's a really good point because there's a homogenization. And it's not only at the level of the news director who is watching these monitors, or even on the national level, where if you go into a manager of one of the major cable or broadcast networks, they too are monitoring the other competitive stations and networks. What you have to understand is that there's a homogenization throughout the country, and the way that works is we're back to this commercial aspect again. The station news director is under the pressure to put on a newscast that is attracting an audience. So he says, how are we going to do that? The manager, perhaps, of the station, or even the owner, the corporate owner, sends along a consultant. The consultant is not there to tell to the news director, hey, this reporter is really terrific journalistically.
Yeah, this is not someone from the Columbia Journalism Review that's consulting.
That's exactly right. This is someone who is trying to make recommendations to the news director and to the station of an anchor or reporter who will attract an audience, and very often they are attractive people. And they go around the country, these consultants, and look at the tapes from the anchors and reporters in various stations in different markets. And then when somebody in Texas, even in Dallas, needs a reporter or an anchor, they may go to one of these consultants who has the tapes and says, hey, we got the perfect person for you who used to work in Fall River, Mass., or used to work in Boston, or work in L.A. And they send the tape, and usually it's a very good-looking person with a very slick hairdo and so on. And they may be hired because they think that person will attract an audience and build eyeballs and get them advertisers. The same anchors and anchorettes are being shown across the country to various stations for those news directors, so there's a homogenized product being put out there in the country.
Steve Powers is my guest. He's a media scholar and journalist. His book is called How to Watch TV News. It's been newly updated from the original 1992 edition that was co-written with the late Neil Postman. We'll return to our conversation in just a moment, and you're welcome to join us by calling 1-800-933-5372, or you can send email to think@kera.org.
Funding for Think is made possible by SMU's Master of Liberal Studies program, a way to keep your greatest two tools, creativity and curiosity, sharp. Details online at smu.edu/MLS.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris. Chris Boyd, speaking this hour with journalist and media scholar Steve Powers. His book is called How to Watch TV News, and it has been newly updated. You can join us by calling 1-800-933-5372 or sending email to think@kera.org. Steve, if there is any pressure greater than the pressure to attract an audience and make money, it is the pressure of time. Can you talk about how that affects the quality of a television newscast?
Yes. As a matter of fact, when I was working at Channel 5 in New York, which now is a Fox outlet, I remember one day when I was choppered into a story upstate New York and jumped out of the chopper on the ground, ran to a house where there had been a crime committed, a murder, and had about 30 or 40 seconds to talk to an officer who was on the scene. Literally ran back, sort of tracing the wires that I saw on the ground to my position where I was about to go live. And I was on the air even before I had any time to adjust or to think or to absorb the information that I got. But as you know, when you're in television, you learn how to do that. And I did the live report, jumped back in the chopper, and I was off and running somewhere else. And that's not atypical for television news, even at a network level. Oftentimes they will have, in the book, How to Watch TV News, there's a chapter about Big Feet, among other things, called a reporter who is a star reporter and covers major stories called a Bigfoot. And that person will be flown in often, perhaps, let's say, to cover the California fire. And they'll be whisked over to the fire scene. Probably they'll have no opportunity or time to talk to anybody in the newsmaking aspect of it, the firefighters and directors. But they'll probably be briefed by a producer who will have this scene all set up so that that reporter will be in front of the camera, and behind the camera there'll be smoke and flames and what have you. The reporter goes on the air, and as soon as that reporter's done barely again absorbing the story that they've covered, they may be off for another story or off for another report, which brings us to the other problem, and that is because of the advent of 24-hour news coverage on the part of cable channels such as CNN, MSNBC, and what have you. What you have is reporters dashing from camera to camera, doing report after report, many times early in the morning until late at night on the big stories, and having little time to really work the story, get in there and talk to the people who are being affected by the story, getting original information and reporting it. So there's less reporting being done by those reporters and more sort of anchor work from the scene, if you will. And that's a problem because what we see is 24-hour coverage, and it's running reporters absolutely ragged all over the country.
Well, and investigative stories may be somewhat different, but obviously what that formula that you just described does not allow for is those fact-checking phone calls that a lot of magazines and newspapers will make before they go to print with something.
Absolutely. It just doesn't happen. You're lucky if everything lines up correctly. And I think we had a case, although it wasn't a case where he had to rush, but we had a case where the lack of fact-checking ended Dan Rather's career at CBS.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's speak to Mohammed in Richardson. Hi, Mohammed.
Hi, Chris Boyd. How are you?
Fine, thanks.
I just want to say that you have done a great job ever since you took over for Glenn Mitchell. You've somehow managed to fill his big shoes, and I listen quite often, and you never disappoint.
That's very kind of you. Thank you.
It's a national show.
Thank you.
I just want to say that Reagan, I believe the reason why the news coverage started changing from what really needs to be newscasted as opposed to what people want to see is because when Reagan came along, I think he deregulated the news gathering industry. I think he made it somehow more profitable, I think. I'm not sure, but I don't think that's been mentioned in the show. So if you guys could touch on that.
Thanks for your call.
All right, thank you.
Can you talk about the deregulation of news?
What happened was the FCC used to enforce the rule that broadcasters are supposed to operate television stations in the public interest, convenience, and necessity. And what basically that means, and most most of the public is unaware of the fact that they own the airwaves. The public owns the airwaves. The stations don't. And the stations are licensed to use the airwaves. So as a result of getting that license, the station, news operations included, are supposed to be operating the TV stations for the good of the people who are watching it, not just for profits. And President Reagan deregulation of the FCC, and there was much less attention paid to license renewal and bringing the stations to task for not doing what they were supposed to do.
I want to talk about the other kind of time pressure, which is that no matter what, even with the 24-hour stations, there has to be a certain amount of editing because you can't, if one were to know of every event in the world, you couldn't cover it. You couldn't fit it into a newscast, and particularly with a half-hour or an hour program.
Right.
So many places now talk about having web extras, and the internet would seem to be the ideal spot for providing all this great information that doesn't fit into the broadcast product. I'm wondering if you would assess for us the kind of content that we're actually receiving in these web extras.
You know, Chris, that's really interesting because you would think that with web extras and a lot of additional outlets for news that we would be getting a more important and necessary information. But I'm not sure that that's happening. And the problem is this, that when there were just a few of the networks operating, you had what you call gatekeepers who would be in charge of what went on the air in those newscasts. They would decide what stories and how those stories were presented. Then when that expanded to the cable outlets, you had more gatekeepers, but there were still people who were vetting the news, if you will. When the news moved over to the Internet, suddenly anybody, and that means anybody, can now put an item on the Internet, whether it's true or not, and get it distributed around the world almost instantly. And there's not a gatekeeper to say, hey, this story is true or that story is partially true. This story is false. That fact is right. This fact is wrong. So no one is keeping track of what is going out there in the form of information and news. And I think that what is going to happen and what is happening is that a lot of the public is getting much more information but is getting more and more confused as to what information is real and what isn't.
Steve Powers is my guest. His book is called How to Watch TV News. Let's go next to Plano and speak to Ashley. Hi, Ashley.
Hi, Chris. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Firstly, I just want to say your program in this topic is an oasis of sense and intelligence in a dark desert of dumbed-down tribe. I really, one of the points I wanted to make was I moved here to Dallas 2 years ago, and one of the things that concerned me was always, and we used to talk about this with, as you can tell, I'm from Europe, from England. We used to talk about this with friends, German, French, and Italian friends. And it was, how could, and this is just an example of the asymmetry of facts and reality, but how could American society, for example, have such a high approval rating of the government for so long, given some of the obvious or apparently evident facts of things that were happening economically, politically, and of course, geopolitically with the situation, with the war on terror and so on and so forth. And since moving here and being immersed in the news environment, it's clear this biased and sensationalist reporting that Steve has been describing in an excellent way, by the way, and thank you for that, is so pervasive. It's very difficult to tell what is it that I'm missing. So in a way, that kind of like, you know, you understand how that disparity between ratings and facts and going on and what the public perceives versus the news they're given is there. But my question is, what do you think is the prime driver? Could it be that the FCC has fallen asleep at the wheel? And just adding to that, you know, one of the things that amazed and impressed me was that Colin Powell's son, I believe, was the chairman of the FCC for quite a long time and made a couple of decisions regarding the further commercialization, industrialization, and homogenization of the media that Steve mentioned earlier. So my question is, do you think, is it because the FCC's fallen asleep at the wheel?
Thanks for your call, Ashley.
Thank you.
I think there's a couple of factors about what you're talking about, Ashley. It's an excellent question. One of them is that the FCC is not as diligent as it could and should be in watching broadcast outlets. Another is that they have been approving the conglomeration that I discussed before, whereas these huge corporations are buying up most of the media and as a result control what we can see and cannot see. And besides the FCC's view towards decontrol, we have the corporate ownership's influence, if you will, on the news. And there's a new phenomenon that seems to be taking effect, and that is, and we saw it with the Fox Network, the Fox News Network. Regardless of what their slogans are, they seem to be tilted toward the administration and toward supporting President Bush. MSNBC seemed to take a look at that and apparently is now tilting the other way and is tilting toward the Democrats, and they are finding they are able to build an audience by attracting people who want to hear positive news about the Democrats. So Fox is attracting people who want to hear positive news about the administration. MSNBC seems to be trying to build an audience with people who want to hear positive news about the Democrats. And this is a new phenomenon because news outlets are supposed to be objective. They're supposed to be bringing you the truth so that when you go and watch a newscast, you can say, hey, these journalists are trying to give me a picture of what's going on out there. But now you have to put and realize that there's a filter on that news coming through from the various cable networks, and that filter may be trying to tilt an audience in their direction. Again, the motivation is commercial.
Steve, obviously among all the dilettantes and people who are interested mostly in getting their faces on television and getting their point of view on television, there are serious journalists working in the broadcast field. I'm wondering if you can talk about how aware career television journalists are of the limitations of the medium and of the artificial constraints on their ability to really work as true journalists.
Again, a good question, Chris. And again, the problem comes down to one of individuality, and that is that the journalists, the ones who care, really try to do the best job they can. But the problem is that when you're out there in the field and you're dashing about madly and you don't have the time to get the information that you need, and yet you have to go on the air when you have to go on the air, you are depending more and more on producers and on people who may not have the same qualifications that you do. That's one factor. The other factor is, especially on a local level, local stations are seeing that their veterans, their veteran reporters, and even veteran anchors are getting more money than the newbies, and they are tending to fire, this is going on across the country right now, the more experienced reporters and hire less experienced reporters, and therefore, when you watch a television news program, you might see someone who cannot bring to the table the kind of depth and information that you would like to see on a given story, especially locally. In order for someone to know what's going on in Dallas, they should have some background in Dallas and know the cultural and other aspects of that area. But they might just fly in a new reporter because of one of those consultants that we spoke about before from
Iowa.
somewhere in California, and they're reporting on the local issues, perhaps not as well as the veteran reporter.
Steve Powers is my guest. Our telephone number is 1-800-933-5372. The book we're discussing is called How to Watch TV News. Let's go next to Bill in Dallas. Hi, Bill.
Hi. Sir, would you please mention the devastation that this country will experience when they switch from broadcast to a digital cast?
Devastation how, Bill?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear you.
Can you explain? You think it's going to be devastating? In what way?
Because there will no longer be broadcast. It'll be piped into your home, and they're going to have a line directly into your house, and they're going to be able to feed you whatever they want to feed you.
I'm not sure that's exactly the way it works, but if you'd like to comment, Steve.
But I just mean because there's not going to be broadcast anymore. It's going to be directly wired to you, basically.
Well, you can buy a little converter box and you can receive the box. Do you think there will be a change in the kind of coverage we see, Steve?
Yeah, I do. I understand Bill's concern because right now it sounds so odd, but cable companies, in many cases, control the kinds of channels that we see. There's some competitive pressure on them to bring us an array of stations, but there are one or two cable networks, or, if you will, that control all of the stations that they carry. And as a result, they have enormous power as to what the nation sees and doesn't see. But with digital, what is going to happen, I believe, is that the local station suddenly, instead of having one outlet for a channel, now will have two or three or even four outlets because they can have more digital channels on each one of the broadband access methods, and you're going to have a breakup of information. So a local channel may just have local news, if you will, on a separate digital channel, weather on another channel, and so on and so forth. So that is yet to be shown what they're going to do with the extra channels they have to work with. But I don't think it's going to be an improvement for television news in any way.
Steve Powers is my guest. He's a journalist and a media scholar. His book is called How to Watch TV News. It was originally written with the late Neil Postman in 1992. It has been newly updated to include a lot of the technological changes that we have seen over the past 16 years. You can join our conversation after the break by sending an email to think@kera.org, or you can get on the line in a few minutes to 1-800-933-5372.
Funding for Think is made possible by SMU's Master of Liberal Studies program, a way to keep your greatest two tools, creativity and curiosity, sharp. Details online at smu.edu/MLS.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd, speaking this hour with Steve Powers. His newly revised book is called How to Watch TV News. If you'd like to join us, the number is 1-800-933-5372. Email address is think@kera.org. David in Plano would like to hear you comment on the use of vague language in broadcast news. He says, my example is phrases like a couple of or several, and I'm concerned how inexact reports that use terms like this are inexact, and wonder if you would comment on the prevalence of such language.
Yep. As especially, we have a chapter called The Bias of Language and the Bias of Pictures, and it involves this aspect, and that is the situation is that when somebody says something, when they're using specific words, and you have to realize that what you are listening to in the way of that track is not the event itself. In other words, they're talking about something that's happening, but you are not actually experiencing it. And with the words that the person uses, changes the connotation of the event that they're talking about. And it's pretty hard for you when you're sitting there on your couch and watching television to listen to every specific word. But you have to, and you have to try to discern what they're saying. We use the example of writing a two-paragraph description of a dinner you had with two other people, and then asking the others present if they would write independently a couple of paragraphs describing the same dinner, and then you compare the paragraphs, and they'll be entirely different because people have different subjective understanding of events and what happened, and in presenting them in the form of writing or in speaking, you are going to use certain words that will change the connotation of them. Now, every news writer is doing that to tell every story. So you have to be conscious as a viewer as to what language is being used and the bias of each word.
Well, and it's funny, even absent a bias, there is that magic word allegedly that allows you to pretty much say anything about anyone.
Yes.
Because you claim it's allegedly having done something.
Right. And of course, the latest thing now is in asking questions, especially on the more sensational shows. You know, is Brad Pitt joining the Iranian army? You know, I mean, which has no basis of truth at all, but it asks the questions and it puts it out there. And to a casual listener, you certainly can walk away with the wrong meaning.
Well, it's almost like push polling in a way.
Yeah.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's go next to Igweneke in Grand Prairie. Hi, Igweneke.
Yes, thank you, Christy. How are you?
Fine, thank you.
Yeah. Yes, my question to your guest is the U.S. media biased? For instance, when you pick up a newspaper or a magazine and you look at the content, you can easily understand where the writer is coming from, either it's a liberal or conservative. When the purpose is to pass information, educate the audience or the readers.
You mean educate the audience to the slant of the writer?
Yeah.
I think it's important for you as a reader or when you're watching TV news for you to try to understand exactly what you just said. It's very important for you to know who the reporter is who is giving you the news. I'll give you even a more basic example of instead of just a political leaning. A reporter is standing before you and giving you a story about an official or about a policy. Do you understand that reporter is probably a millionaire? You know, if he's working network news or she is working network news and is one of the star reporters, maybe a multimillionaire and is reporting on a story perhaps on blue collar issues, on wages and plant closings and what have you, and so forth. And these are people who are friendly with officials, top officials in Washington. Sometimes they hobnob with them, other times they don't. And you should be conscious of exactly who these people are who are giving you the news. Reporters try to be objective, but even that whole question of objectivity is so difficult because we all come from different backgrounds and we all have different subjective ideas of this life. And for someone to stand up and make a pronouncement, the only defense that you have is to try to understand who this person is talking to you, just like you do in your everyday life when you're talking to someone in the street and getting some information from someone. You factor in who that person is and where they come from in order to understand what they're saying.
When you make suggestions in the book, which is called How to Watch TV News, you suggest, for one thing, that people reduce their television news viewing by about a third. Fair
yep.
enough. I think we understand why. You also suggest that we reduce by a third our need to have opinions about every single thing we hear.
Right.
What does that change?
Well, I'll tell you. First of all, I want to tell you where that came from. I did many years. I had a talk show in New York in between working on television, teaching, and radio and all that. And every morning I'd come to the station and I had to have an opinion about whatever the breaking news was because that's the way talk radio works. After years and years of doing that, when it stopped, when I stopped doing a talk show, and I get up in the morning, and I didn't have to have an opinion about every headline. I realized how freeing that was to allow me to get additional information, absorb other concepts, not have to reach a specific pointed opinion, and I could sort of leave myself open to the to the wonderment of gaining more information and more knowledge. And I think it's a great idea for everybody to do that. You don't have to go to the next cocktail party or dinner party and say, this is what I think about this, that, or the other thing. You're just not required.
That's such an interesting point, because so often when we come up with an opinion instantly, regardless of the other information we do receive, we almost don't want to, we don't want to hear it, we don't want to process it or make it part of what we've said because we've already staked a position out.
Yep, yep. You know, again, it's important beside knowing who this reporter was, which I was mentioning a while ago. I was thinking of another factor that's really important and really is the basis of the book, and that is, if people instead of flying off the handle, having an opinion about this and that and the other thing, when they watch the newscast, a television newscast, I think it's really important for them to really understand what they are viewing, that what they're viewing is a show, that this is not just a presentation of information for that person to absorb and form opinions about and what have you. This is a show being put on for them. And if you think about it, when you sit down to watch a newscast, the first thing you'll hear is music, which has absolutely nothing to do with any fact that you're about to hear. But what it does is set you up. In a way, it manipulates you into thinking that you're about to hear something important, that it has gravitas, and that the people who are behind these desks know what they're talking about. And then that's your first picture, is the anchor sitting behind these authoritarian desks, you know, wearing costumes, tailored clothes for the women and ties and jackets for the men, and giving you the impression they really know what they're talking about. And we have to be conscious of what we're watching when we're watching it. Not only the bias of language, as one of the callers said, not only the bias of the reporter, as another one of the callers said, but the overall production, the production of, by the producers of that newscast, that are trying to manipulate us into staying tuned for the commercials of that newscast so that we'll buy product.
Let's go next to Tom in Farmersville. Hi, Tom.
Hello.
Hi, Tom. Go ahead, please.
Hi. Great show, Chris. And I'm really looking forward to reading the book and sharing it with my students.
Thank you, Tom.
Just a brief comment, and the postman's entertaining ourselves to death was just, I shared that with 1,000 students probably. So I know that was a pleasure to work with him. My comment.
I should add that was written by Neil Postman, who was my co-author who passed on.
Yes.
And just a terrific media thinker.
Well, I'm sure you miss him. I teach primarily freshmen and sophomore students, and I'm a longtime teacher. And something I've noticed in the last decade that I would like to ask you to speak to is how public discourse has changed. And I think the FCC does have responsibilities here. I've noticed that the students, when they do talk about public issues, it's all about entertainment. And I don't think that's their fault. I think that's what's available to them. And so if I bring up a comment, and I teach art, but, you know, just generally college discourse, going back a decade or so, there used to be a lot of peer pressure for students to speak intelligently about public matters. If I mentioned something in the classroom about eminent domain or contemporary issue that's important, it's usually blank stares these days. And that was not always true of freshmen and sophomore students. And I wondered if you could just speak to that a little bit.
It's a huge topic. It starts off with what we were talking about before, where the news used to be more seriously oriented when it was less commercially oriented, and you had really important issues being discussed. The other thing is now on especially on the cable channels, when anything is discussed, it's usually people yelling at one another or trying to get in some FaceTime on the tube with shouting their phrases and having a ringmaster saying, "Okay, you speak now. You speak now. You, what's your opinion? What's your opinion? What's your opinion?" And as a result, everybody's spouting forth on these multitude of opinions. And they have maybe, 15, 20 seconds to say what they think is on their mind with no depth and really little enough thought. And this streams on from one show to another to another. There's never a respite. There's never a time where you can just stop it, with the exception of a few TV shows, many of them on PBS and NPR, where you can stop and reflect and really think about what's going on. So, again, it gets back to this business of entertaining the public, getting them to watch the shows, and they feel that this artificial excitement of quick opinions and yelling and so-called dynamic influence is playing a role. And there's little enough intelligent discourse. You're absolutely right.
I think you certainly make the point with our discussion today and absolutely in the book that a well-informed person can't rely only on television news. Can a well-informed person rely on everything but television news? In other words, just eliminate that and still be well-informed and sort of understand what's going on in the world.
Yeah, you could do that, but, you know, television news does have a place, and one of the terrific things about television is that it has picture, as, of course, does YouTube, too, nowadays, because you can just go to YouTube and get the picture. But while you have basic information, and your basic information should come primarily from newspapers, simply because they have more depth, they're covering many more stories than a TV newscast does, and now you've absorbed a little bit of the background of a story, of maybe some investigative reporting, maybe the basics of a story, and you flick on TV, you're going to catch the picture of it. So then you're going to see what the leaders of this country look like, what the fire in California looks like, what the flooding in the middle United States looks like, and so on. So it plays a role in rounding out, if you will, the image and picture that we have of the formation of the news on a daily basis.
Do you see anything on television news that makes you optimistic about the direction we might be headed in?
No. As a matter of fact, I think that television news, it will be the dodo bird of the future. I think the audience is slowly eroding, especially on the major newscasts at night. More and more they're eroding, and I think with all of the access we have now to the internet and to things like the YouTube or the Jon Stewart Show or newspapers via the internet, because they're having to put on electronic versions in order to survive, that they're not surviving in paper form, that we'll have plenty of different places to go to for information, and TV news, I think, is going to fade into the sunset.
Is it something that we should be happy to see go?
I won't drop a tear.
Steve Powers is my guest. He's a journalist and he's a media scholar. His book is called How to Watch TV News. It was originally written with Neil Postman, the late Neil Postman, in 1992, but Steve has recently updated it to reflect the realities of today's television news and other sources of news. Steve, it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much for spending the hour with us.
It's been a joy, and thank you for all those terrific questions from your audience.
My name is Chris Boyd. Thanks for listening and have a great day.
Think is produced by Jeff Whittington and engineered by Jeannie Mascoro. Learn about upcoming programs, subscribe to our free daily podcast, and order CD copies of your favorite Think shows on the radio page of KERA.org. And we'd like to hear what you think about Think. Email your comments, questions, and suggestions to think@KERA.org.